Okay, so today we have an interview with Steve Noble, and Steve is the started Alternatives in London, which is a fantastic company. So welcome today to Steve, and I'd love to hear a bit about you and how you came into the personal development world and how Alternatives came about.
Hi, well, thanks, Kelly. Well, I didn't actually start Alternatives. It started 28 years ago. I wasn't the founder, but I came along about 16 years ago, and I've been the director for 10 years. I started out life in working in the city in international banking, which was, you know, it's kind of one of those careers which is well paid. You get cheap mortgages and all that. But for me, I had no passion for it whatsoever. And I did that for 10 years. And then I hit a crisis where I really, really realized that I didn't really want to do that anymore. And but with pressures of family, I had a sort of breakdown with it because I didn't feel I could leave. But and through that kind of emotional breakdown, I left. I took a year off. I left and I found another career in the local government, which I worked in again for 10 years. And then at the end of 10 years, I came to another point where I realized I didn't want to do that anymore. And I remember just sort of contemplating it and getting all kinds of messages around me just saying time to leave. So I did. And then I spent 2 years just doing lots of different things. During this time, I really discovered personal development and spirituality. And so that was really helping me on my journey. And eventually I came to Alternatives. I started working for them, and I've been a director for 10 years. And apart from that, I also do have a coaching business and run workshops. And I do writing. I've written 2 books, and I'm writing a third.
Fantastic. So what does Alternatives do? I know it's obviously based in London, but what do they do?
Well, they're based in St. James's Church, which is a very kind of central church, very connected to the palace, and they have lots of kind of famous people turn up there, politicians, royal family and stuff like that. But Alternatives, it's very unique in terms of it's the only organization of its kind, a kind of personal development, spiritual organization that's connected to a church. Although we're not part of the church give us the space to use every Monday night. So Alternatives every Monday has been running a talk series on spirituality and personal development in the church. And we've had speakers from Thich Nhat Hanh, Amma, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, Brandon Bays, most of the big names, Eckhart Tolle, in the kind of this business have been through our doors. We also run weekend workshops, and we have a ongoing coaching group which meets once a month with different coaches coming along and giving different ideas and techniques for coaching.
Fantastic. I've been to a couple of the talks there as well, and the speakers you get there are amazing, world-class speakers. So we'll put information up on the site so people can have a look at that and see what's coming up and maybe come along, which will be great.
Okay.
So I'd love to hear more about your first book, Freeing the Spirit, because it's our program is very much about mind, body and spirit. And we completely believe that to get well and recover from ME is a complete holistic approach. So I'd just love to hear a bit more about your thoughts behind it and how you came to write that book.
Yeah, well, I was actually in the bath when I had the inspiration, time to write a book. It was almost like a voice just said, now you have to write a book. And I was thought, well, all right. I mean, it could have been almost like a spirit guide speaking to me. I don't know. It was so strong. And I got, I was even given the title Freeing the Spirit. So then I wondered, well, what on earth would a book like this be about? So I decided, because I've been on a journey of personal development and looking at all kinds of things from spirituality, meditation, shamanism, magic, NLP, coaching, and I've done lots and lots of personal development courses, all different kinds. So I thought, well, maybe I'd write a book about transformation, how we can transform holistically using a number of different things. So I wrote the book, which has a very strong magical slant. It talks about how to use the male and female aspects within ourselves, how to use the kind of the powers in nature, the elements, earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. It talks about simple rituals. It talks about changing beliefs magically and all these kind of things. So it was really a book about my own journey at the time. And so that went out with Rider some years ago. It's now out of print, I think. But, you know, if I was to write it again, it'd be a different book because my journey now is different.
Yeah. So what have you learned since that journey there?
Well, I think for many years I really explored the kind of spiritual. I was doing lots of meditation, probably 2 or 3 times a day. I was I trained with a teacher called Jill Edwards, who runs something called, or wrote a book called Living Magically, and I was working a lot with her material on how to use the mind and calling upon spirit and guides and all kinds of things to really change energies in our body and shift my current reality. The idea was we create our own reality kind of idea, and how our focus and thinking actually shifts our external world. So I practiced with that over a number of years, and I had some amazing things happen to me. My life completely changed. You know, I was, apart from my career, also my relationships. I was married, that ended. Then it set me off on a whole different journey. And I think the journey was started because of coming across these ideas. Otherwise, I'd probably be bored sitting in some office somewhere still and doing what I did 10 years, 20 years ago.
And I guess that's part of the inspiration for your new book that you're writing right now.
Yeah, the new book's called Enlightened Work, and it's about how work can be more about meaning, fulfillment, passion and purpose, how work is a spiritual journey, and how we can open to finding more of our true potential in the work we do, rather than just going and doing it for money or climbing a corporate ladder or something boring like that.
I think that's so key as well, because so many people are living an unfulfilled life, and I think that's another reason why people do develop ME or chronic fatigue, because they are just working and working and working for the money, and they're not happy, they're not fulfilled, they're not passionate about what they're doing. And yeah. So many people that seem to come out the other side of ME completely transform their lives. They never go back to doing the same job that they did that was part of the reason they ended up with ME generally.
Yeah.
Because they find their purpose or passion. And I think sometimes the reason the illness lasts so long is because they don't know what it is that they're supposed to be learning, or what the illness is teaching them. So I think what tips or strategies would you say that people can look at to find their purpose or passion?
Well, I read a book many years ago called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, which is by... Susan Jeffers, yeah. Now, it's a great book, and I think the idea is we all have these familiarity zones or comfort zones, and when we get to the edge of one of those zones, let's say it's work, we always encounter resistance. So let's say I've worked in an office and I really don't want to do it anymore, but that's all I've known. I don't know what's outside of working in an office, and so that's the edge of my zone. So when I come to start to thinking about moving out, it gets a bit scarier, and the closer I get to changing, the more scary it becomes. And usually when fear or any other kind of resistance, like confusion or doubt or all kinds of all kinds of things like that kick in, then the tendency is to come back, or even to develop something that seems to prevent us from moving forward. You know, it can seem like other people are blocking us, or even our body starts to block us. You know, we can start becoming ill. And in the workshops I've done, I've noticed that, for example, very simple, using kinesiology, if you get somebody to think about their problems or something that they want but don't have, it creates a stress in the body. Yes. And you can test this just with arm muscle testing. That if you test it, okay, think about something now that you want but don't have. Usually the arm is very weak and goes down. There's an immediate kind of loss of energy in the body. But then if you say, think about something you absolutely love or feel grateful for, the arm is strong.
Yeah.
So there is an immediate effect on the body. So in a larger term of life, sometimes something could be so scary that it's easier to, you know, escape into kind of a mental illness or physical disease or having people around you saying you can't do it and feeling absolutely stuck because of other people. But really the idea for me is that all this resistance on the outside, even our body having resistance, is something on a deeper level that we need to shift. It could be a deep belief in unworthiness. It could be a deep belief in the world doesn't support our dreams. It could be a belief that nobody else in my family made it or did what they want to do, so why on earth should I? All kinds of things, you see. Mm. And these are very, very strong. I think from a spiritual point of view, there's something that they call like psychic contracts, which means that we make kind of unconscious promises to our family and loved ones, which, for example, goes, let's say you have a mother who's a suffering martyr, and then you're growing up. Actually, because you love her and you feel loyal to her, you may take on that same, well, because I love you, I'll be a suffering martyr too, and I won't follow my dreams. And then no matter how much you try, there's always this kind of unconscious block going, you can't do it. Or for example, you might see your father working hard, sweating like crazy just to make a living and not enjoying what he's doing, but sacrificing his life for the family. You might look at that and go, well, because I love you, that must be what work's about. I'll do the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're very strong, these kind of family loyalties. And, even if you think that sounds absolutely crazy, it's a very childly, unconscious works in these kind of childlike ways. So if we make a promise when we're younger to care for our mother or whatever, those promises still run until we counteract them. So a lot of our difficulties are just kind of mental or psychic or spiritual blocks. There may even be vow, you know, if you believe, any of your listeners believe in the idea of past lives. Imagine that you've taken a life, you've lived the life of a monk many times. Now, monks in the Christian church take vows of celibacy, poverty, and obedience.
Wow.
Now, vows are very strong in the unconscious, so people hit all kinds of money issues, and it might be just like past life vows, things like that. So it's quite complex. There's a number of things in our psyche that can actually block us. And so consciously, we may have no idea about these things. We might start moving towards our dreams and get all kinds of blocked or feel scared and then retreat into something like an illness. Or, I mean, I suffered from depression for about 7 to 10 years.
Ah.
And that depression was very severe, very disabling. In fact, it was almost like the point of being suicidal kind of thing, you know. And the only way I got through it was actually finding this other dimension of life where I realized that a lot of my blocks weren't about people, weren't about my lack of not getting an MA in university. It was more about how I grew up, the conditioning I took on from my family. And I then had to learn, well, how do I reverse that? Because I had no idea what to do about it.
Mm.
Does that make any sense, any of that?
Yes, completely. It's fantastic. So in terms of if people are aware of some of these limiting beliefs that are holding them back, what are some good steps that they can take to start changing them?
Well, one very simple question somebody could ask themselves the most basic question is, in terms of dreaming, is what do you want? The kind of what question, not the how question, which most people say, what do I want? Well, I want to change my job. How am I going to do it? I don't know, so I'm going to give up.
Yeah.
They ask the second question too quickly. So it's good just to ask the first question, what do I want in terms of my – and just think of every area of your life, from health, what do you want in your health? What do you want in your work, your money, your relationships, your family, your home, your spiritual life, your leisure, your fun, your area of creativity, and so on, you know, or maybe travel. What do you want in these areas? Because mostly we're trained to think about what we don't want, and that creates a lot of stress in our bodies. You know, well, I don't want these. You know, if you think about the things you don't want, then the unconscious mind tends to attract them because it has no idea about negatives. It doesn't know. I don't want to think about a pink elephant now. Well, the moment I say that, your unconscious mind goes, pink elephant. Oh, well, right, here we are. There's an image of a pink elephant for you. The unconscious doesn't understand I don't want. It understands just the kind of positive statements. So if I was to say, don't think about the most amazing holiday you've ever had. Now, don't think about it now.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't think about it. Your unconscious mind can't help it. It will think about it. It will go and retrieve it for you. So the idea of thinking about what you want is a much better practice in terms of your unconscious mind. And a lot of these illnesses are created unconsciously, of course. We don't consciously want them. So what do you want? And really scope it out. Really dream. Start dreaming big. And really resist the urge to start asking how you're going to create that just yet. That can be further down the line. But most people practice the what do I not want? Or what are the problems in my life that I have to solve? And thinking about these things creates a lot of stress in the body.
Okay.
Now, the newspapers give you problems every day to think about, problems of the world, problems of the nation, problems of the economy. These are problems that we've got no way of even solving ourselves. So it's best not to read too much newspapers or think about too many global problems. It's not about being selfish, but really it's about thinking about what is in the power of your influence to change in your life, and then then around you, slowly, step by step, that circle will expand. That you might start, for example, in my life, I had no power to do anything. I felt my work life's a disaster, my love life's a disaster. So if that's the case, how could I possibly help anybody else? But as soon as I shifted my own work life to get more joy and more passion in it, started doing something that I more want to do, as soon as I shifted my relationship, started thinking about, well, what kind of people do I really want to hang out with? And are they the people I'm hanging out with now? And the answer was no, not really. The people I'm hanging out now were just people who want to talk about their problems.
Yeah.
So the more I got clear about what I did want, the easier it was for me to start moving. Well, where can I start hanging out with these people? How can I start finding out more about the ideas I'm interested in? Like all my bookshelf, when I first came across these ideas, was filled with history books and philosophy books and novels. As soon as I came across personal development, spirituality, or spiritual awakening, my whole bookshelf changed. All my CDs and DVDs became more things about things I was really, really passionate about rather than things I thought I should be interested in.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
So that's a very basic idea. I think for people who haven't got much energy, and these things are very cyclical, you know, they might have energy today and then not much later or tomorrow morning. So it's good to be aware of kind of where your energy's at. And kind of not to push yourself too hard. But it's nice to just have some very gentle goals as well. I think goals, particularly in things like depression anyway, I don't know about ME, but gentle goals are very helpful for a person who wants to get more direction in their life. Just thinking about, well, what three things would I love to do today? Well, I'd love to actually walk through the park, which is what I've done today. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go and visit a friend, and I'd love to go and sit in a coffee shop that I really love down Church Street, which is what I did also. Something very simple like that. And when you can start just, you know, walking through the park and going to a coffee shop, it's not a major goal. But the more you can set these simple goals and achieve them, and you can start to feel better about yourself. You think, well, actually, that was really good doing those three things. It really shifted my whole day. So then every day can become a bit like that. Well, in the morning, how about doing 10 minutes of yoga, maybe 5 minutes of yoga? So you're starting to take more in charge of your life and your energy. And there might be times where you don't feel like doing it and you can rest, and then you can carry on when you do feel you've got a bit more energy.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's really important, setting goals. But also what you were talking about in terms of shifting your focus to what you do want, because when you do have something like ME, your whole life is taken over by the unlimited number of symptoms that you have, and the fact that generally there is no plan of action, there's no plan of how you get well, and that's why our program does help take people step by step through that. But because you've had so long of not knowing how to get out of this, and your whole mindset is taken over by how bad you're feeling and you don't know what to do about it. So if you take work stress out and financial stress out and everything else, the illness stresses you out because you don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this creates a stress because I'm in it and I don't know how to get out of it. There are all kinds of things that can help that. I mean, one of the things that can help some people and doesn't help others is affirmations. They help some people. Not everybody likes them. One thing that a lot of people seem to like, and certainly ME sufferers could do, or a chronic fatigue sufferers, is meditation, because it doesn't take a lot of energy. You can sit down and you can just simply breathe and become aware of your body. And rather than actually trying to escape what's going on in the body, meditation can take you further into it. And actually that might sound like not a good idea, but actually energetically, if you go deeper into something that's a bit painful, it tends to start breaking up, I found.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of the workshops I do, when people have a problem, you know, rather than doing the positive, okay, let's just do affirmations, which is one very good way of doing it. What we can do is actually energetically, let's start tracking the problem in the body. So what I would say, I mean, if your listeners are listening to this, let's say they had something that they don't like particularly, then I'd say, well, when you think about this area, where do you feel it in your body? And then they would normally point to, well, their heart, their chest, their belly. I'd say, okay, fine. Breathe with that feeling and tell me, what color is the feeling? And it sounds a strange question, but their unconscious mind would immediately go, well, it's a kind of yucky green, or it's a kind of horrible grey or something. So I say, great, okay, there we are. There's the colour of it. Okay, what shape is the colour? And it's a strange question to ask, what shape is the colour? But they normally, their unconscious will give them a shape, like a cloud or a kind of a cube or something like that. So I said, fine, okay. Is there energy moving in this shape? And they'll say, well, yeah, there's a little bit moving on the inside, but the outside it's kind of still or whatever's going on. So then I encourage them just to breathe. And it actually helps if there's somebody with them doing it with them, because actually with two people doing it together, being a witness actually gives it more power. But if they're just breathing and going into that kind of suffering, because this is a pattern in the body of suffering, just awareness and breathing alone and acceptance starts to break the energy pattern up. And they normally find it starts to move and spiral and change color and or fragment or change into something else. And always, 100% of the time, this exercise makes somebody feel better, even though they're going deeper into their suffering.
Wow, that's really interesting. I haven't heard of that approach before. I mean, we talk about meditation on our program and things like that, but that's a really different concept, but I can see the power in that. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one way of doing it. Another way of doing it would be to take something a person feels really grateful for. So when I say, well, okay, think of something you feel really grateful for, and when you think of that, where in your body do you feel that? And I do the same process with gratitude. Well, I feel in my heart, I feel open, I feel what color, I feel it's golden, I feel it's kind of radiating. And we do the same thing with something like gratitude, and that can have a really enlivening effect on the body when they allow this energy of gratitude just to spiral around.
I've heard that gratitude has the same vibration, as they say, as love. And the feeling of love is probably one of the best feelings in the world, isn't it, when you're in love?
Oh, totally, yeah.
And I've heard that gratitude has that same, can give you that same feeling. And if that is the case, then if we could be so much more grateful for everything that's going on in our lives, we could feel a lot better.
Yeah, I think it's an important point you made, because I think there's a scale of emotions in that we all live through. And I think there's a great book called Power Versus Force by David Hawkins, I think his name was, who said that we can vibrate energetically very low. If we're thinking about angry thoughts, guilty thoughts, jealous thoughts, envious thoughts, hateful thoughts, or thoughts I don't have what I want, these will vibrate very low on the scale. I think it goes from 0 up to 1,000. But midway on this scale is things like courage and peace of mind. We're in a more neutral space, or thinking about changing something. And when you go further up the scale, you hit love and gratitude and bliss and enlightenment right at the top. So the idea, I think, is that I would imagine that people suffering with some of these illnesses, some of their thinking is really vibrating, thinking and feeling is vibrating quite on the lower scale, upset and distress and all those things. So really, in terms to improve, you want to start going up the scale somehow, whether it's meditation or gratitude exercise or writing or doing something you love, like singing. You know, I definitely encourage people to do what they love. It has an enlivening effect on a person's whole life. Recently, a friend of mine who I met had been stuck for quite a long time. For many years, actually, she had a very difficult childhood, was kind of adopted at a very young age. I recently met up with her, and she looked completely changed. And I said, what's happened to you? You look completely transformed. She said, you know what? One of the things I've always wanted to do and never done was to sing, and I've just joined a choir. And now my whole life looks different.
Wow.
Just going one night a week to a choir can kind of affect every other area of your life. So if there's something people who have ME really love to do but putting off, just doing it can just affect every other area of your life. Your whole energy will start to come up,
yeah.
Definitely.
It is about finding something that you're passionate about and you're excited about. And I think when they're in such a low state and you haven't got that energy, I remember the feeling, you know, when you can't, you know, get out of bed, the thought of going and doing something you love that's energetic, you think, how can I do that? But it's not about necessarily being able to do it right now, but getting excited about the fact that that can be part of your life again.
Yeah, and the more excitement you feel, the more likely you'll move towards it rather than thinking about all the problems in trying to go towards it, which
yeah.
will demotivate you. I mean, the other thing I think for anybody who's suffering with anything, really, is to start hanging out with the kind of people you really want to hang out with, because there is a tendency. I mean, it can be useful to hang out with people who've got the same illness as you so you can get some kind of reality check. But if you stay there too long, you know, it's like it becomes a bit of a crutch where all we're doing is talking about our illness. You know, if you've ever gone to an AA meeting, how wonderful they are. But you're always saying, hi, I'm an alcoholic every meeting.
Yeah.
It's not probably the best affirmation to make for yourself.
No.
So I would hang out with people who are a bit more joyful than you, a bit more hopeful, because that will affect you, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. They say you could become like the five people you spend most of your time with, don't they?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that really is important, looking at the people that are in your life and seeing who is a positive, happy, fulfilled type of person. And maybe if there's people that are a bit more draining of your energy, then maybe try and avoid them.
Yeah, or just gently, you know, cut down on the time you spend with them. You might still love them and not
yeah.
cut them out of your life. But the other thing is, you know, really look around. What I encourage people to do is look around and find sources of inspiration. Because if you have got ME, you've got plenty of time to sit, read, listen to music, listen to poetry, watch inspiring DVDs. I tend to look out for films that inspire me, music that inspires me, poetry that inspires me, books that inspires me, lectures that inspire me. So the inspiration is infectious as well. That will definitely lift people's energy right up the scale.
Yeah, it's so true. And also laughter. They say that's the best medicine, don't they?
Oh, it's amazing. There was a guy I met recently called Joe Hoare, who runs his laughter workshop. I interviewed him as well. And he had me laughing while I was interviewing him. And I felt so much. My whole day changed after speaking with him. I thought, how wonderful just to spend 10 minutes laughing in the morning about things, you know. But we sometimes feel we shouldn't laugh because there's so many problems in the world. How dare we laugh? But I think we're just adding to the misery in the world if we don't.
Yeah, I know. You know, if there's nothing you can do about it, then, you know, there's no point being depressed about the fact that you can't do anything. Just focus
exactly,
on what you can do.
Exactly, yes, yes. So the other things I would suggest to people is more of a nutritional way. I would suggest that people get out in nature more. Definitely drink enough pure water, because water is important for anybody suffering or even anybody not suffering. For me, I try and drink a litre or two of water, pure water a day. Food is so important, isn't it? You know, I try and eat fresh, organic. I'm mostly vegetarian. I'm very aware. I had a girlfriend once who made me very aware of reading labels whenever I eat anything, just to check what am I actually eating.
Yeah.
I never used to bother before. So I think a diet is important. Lots of water is important. Lots of fresh air. Lots of sunshine is important. Sitting in gardens is important. Flowers are great on the kind of psyche, really. Just looking at flowers.
I think it is important to get back out into nature. I know whenever I go for a walk, whether it's in the country or by the sea, I just completely feel this like wave of calmness come over me. It's like I'm taken over by nature. It completely calms me down, and it's and we talk about that on our program about getting back into nature, but I don't think people really see the value of it enough, and it is so important.
Yeah, it's totally important. I think also what's important is having a real community. I know we talked about having kind of friends who uplift you, but more than that, it's great to have a community of people that really support you if you can. I think loneliness is such a terrible Western illness, isn't it? You know, Christmas when people don't have anyone or family or anything. Just to feel isolated and alone is very debilitating.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's another thing that our program allows people to become part of a community that is working towards recovery.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, you're right about the support groups. I remember going to one and I walked in and they were wheelchair bound people walking with walking sticks as well. And it was a bit like who's got the worst symptoms.
Yeah, yeah.
And it completely freaked me out. I felt like I had a panic attack and I was like, get me out of here. This isn't my life. I can't live like this, you know. And I think the support groups support the illness. And what they do talk about, they may talk about things that may help to improve your symptoms, but none of them are talking about recovery.
Yeah.
And I think that's where our program, in terms of the community, it's about looking at the cause, the underlying causes of what is causing this illness and how you recover from it, rather than just putting a plaster on it. And I think that's what a lot of doctors do, unfortunately. They don't look at the underlying cause. They just stick a plaster on it or give you a pill. You know, and I think that's what the philosophies are and people's mindset is out there about. You know, when you've got a headache, it's just take a pill. It's not what's caused the headache in the first place.
Yeah. Now, I've got a father-in-law who's actually a retired surgeon. And my brother-in-law is a doctor as well. So I know they're living in that kind of paradigm of studying illness. But really, I think, you know, and they probably would tell me everything I need to know about ME, but really the one thing they probably don't know is they haven't sat down with somebody who's recovered and said, well, how did you do it?
Yeah.
And I think it's important in whatever field you want to do, you know, even like if you want to be a writer, well, find somebody who's written and how did they do it? What was their journey? What's their thinking process? Where did they go? What actions did they take? What choices did they make? That's why it's so good to read biographies of people that you kind of want to emulate. So if you want to recover from ME, I would definitely, in the support groups, invite people who have got over it and just ask them, well, what was your challenges and how did you deal with it and how did you recover and what's it like to be on the other side?
Absolutely. And I think it's so important. It's like I've always believed in mentors and finding people that are where I want to be. And they show me how to get there so that I don't have to go down all these wrong paths. You know, I may still have to do that in some areas, but somebody who can guide you where you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's another reason why we wanted to create this program, because for us, we didn't have that. We didn't have anyone that could help show us what to do next, or, you know, what things are going to work and what we need to do. So that's why we developed it, because we would have done anything to have had a program like this. But we can, all we could do is read books of people that had had ME for 25 years saying, you know, you, it's like a living death. And that's really not what you want to hear when you're trying to trying to get out of bed. You know?
Well, exactly. It's like if you're in prison, you want to find out how somebody got out and how they survived on the outside. You don't want to know about it's like a living hell on the inside, you know.
Yeah.
You've probably already worked that out, you know. If you want to know, well, how do I get out of here? And they're the best people to tell you, the ones who've actually done it, who've actually escaped from it. You know, I think that doctors would do well to sit down with people who suffer, who get through any illness and say, well, what did you do that really worked?
Mm.
You know, definitely for ME, I would say. And definitely. And there must be a lot of people that come through the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some really great recovery stories on our program. We've been interviewing some great people, and there's a really reoccurring theme amongst every single one of them, and that is the fact that they find their purpose and their passion, and then they go and live it.
Yeah, that's great.
It is, and that's what your book's about, which is really exciting. So when that's finished and all ready, we'll definitely share that with everybody, because it sounds like a fantastic book, and you're living testament to it, because you know, you've been telling me that you've been, you know, going to a coffee shop and going for walks around the park, and you've been writing, doing some writing. So you're really living your dream.
Yeah, being a writer is my dream, and also to be a trainer. I love doing it. So I guess I am doing that, really, totally. Yeah. Well, there's another thing I want to mention, which is something very simple anybody can do, which I've been using over the years, which is flower essences. I don't know if you've ever had anybody talk about these.
No, we haven't, actually.
But actually, there's a lot of flower essences on the market, but bark flower essences are made in England. They're like from a Victorian doctor, Dr. Bach, or Bach, I don't know. And there's a number of essences that really deal with doubt, uncertainty, fear, loneliness, isolation, hiding behind a mark, all these kind of things that go on, and they really, really are good. And there's a great essence called Wild Oak, which is very good for finding your life's purpose.
Wow.
Because he said in Victorian times that more people, a lot of illnesses actually are created through this kind of lack of purpose than people realise. So Wild Oat is a very good one. And then if people want to be adventurous, there's a great set of flower essences by a guy called, let me see, the Bush Flower Essences, by a guy called Ian White. And they're another whole range, which are brilliant, of energetic. You just add two or three drops to a glass of water, and you could take it a few times a day, and it actually has a great effect on your energy bodies and your emotional body. So if anybody's very sensitive to this kind of healing, it's not an expensive way particularly. I think one bottle costs about, I don't know, you can get a small bottle for about £3.50. It will last a month or so, you know. So it's a very good, and if you've got any groups that get together and actually buy a few together, you can actually share the cost. So it's well worth looking at if you're interested in kind of spiritual solutions.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I have used them in the past as well. I mean, I think one of the well-known ones is Rescue Remedy.
Yeah, if you're in shock or if something shocking happens to you, that's very, very good to use. If you injure yourself or you heard something that gives you an emotional shock, Rescue Remedy is brilliant.
Yeah. And I think so. If people can relate to that one, they've probably heard of it. And then there's so many others that work on so many different levels. So I think that's a really great point that you brought up there, because they are really powerful.
Yeah. And another thing that if people really want to get into, something like massage is very good, body work, you know, all these things are very good. If you can't relax or you're always feeling a bit tense or tired, having an aromatherapy massage can give you a great anchor point to remember that's what it's like to feel totally relaxing, totally relaxed, you know. Something else I tried recently was a flotation tank, which is amazing.
I've had that before. It was the most incredible feeling ever.
Yeah. You bathe in all these kind of rich kind of salt, sea salts in water, and you're floating in this tank. And just the experience of an hour floating is so deeply relaxing. And I think the salt itself is very healing on the body. So there are many, many different ways the person could, through body work, can actually start looking at healing. I mean, some of them do cost money, I guess, but there might be places where you can get it quite cheaply, or people are, I don't know, in support groups where there are people who offer their services freely or not, but I'm sure that's possible.
Yeah, fantastic. We can look into that and get people some more information on that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. We could talk all day, Steve, because you're just a wealth of knowledge and information.
Thank you. Well, if anybody wants to check me out, my website's www.stevenobel.com. That's Steve, StevenNobel.com. There's lots of podcasts on the website you can download. Things about 100 of my own and other people's. So there's a range of things from nutrition to meditation to laughter. It's all on there to work. You can have a listen, download them at your leisure.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Really, really appreciate your time. And I'm sure we'll speak to you again in the future, especially when your new book's out. And we'll connect people up with that. If they want to really find out what their passion and their purpose is in life, then we'll be sending them your way.
Lovely.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to connecting with you again soon for the listeners.
Thanks, Kelly.
Steve.